At first, it was too radical for most back in the late 19th century, but a group of artists in Paris kept experimenting with capturing the vagaries of light and shadow on their canvases and making the outdoors their studio. Today, we call the effects of their short brushstrokes and combining colors Impressionism. And what better place to enjoy their masterpieces than where these artists lived? Guiding us right now on Travel with Rick Steves to the top places for viewing Impressionist art up close in and around Paris is Elizabeth Van Hest. Elizabeth visited Paris from her home in the Netherlands more than 40 years ago. She liked it so much, she's made Paris her home ever since. Elizabeth, bonjour.
Thank you.
First of all, Elizabeth, how do you define Impressionism?
If you think of Impressionism, it is amazing because everybody knows the word. It was, in fact, never introduced by the painters themselves or art specialists. No, it was, in fact, a negative criticism. Because, you know, when the painters who started to paint in the open air and use a different kind of techniques, not a composition anymore, not mixing your colors on your palette. Mm-hmm. No, they started to paint directly on the canvas. And you, as a spectator, you are going to mix the colors.
So they would dab two colors together next to each other on the canvas, and it would mix between the canvas and your eyes, and they
exactly.
wouldn't mix it on their palette.
Yes.
And that gives it a more vibrancy.
Exactly. And these painters, you know, they could only become well known through the official exhibitions. There were no art galleries in those days. So since so many painters have been refused on those official exhibitions in the Salon, in the Louvre, or in the Luxembourg Palace, well, they decided to organize their exhibition themselves. And they did that in a place owned by a photographer called Nada. It was in the year 1874. And of course, all these young painters, they had to display their artwork. And Monet, he took one of his paintings that he had painted in the harbor of Le Havre, where he grew up. And he gave it quickly a title saying, Impression Soleil Levant, Impression Sunrise. Hmm. And there an art critic came inside and said, ha, 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 look at that. That is called Impressionism. And this word became well known, although the painters themselves, they had called themselves independent.
Because they were stepping away from the conservative salon, the mainstream, and they were sort of rebels. And then the critics said, it's just a scant impression, just an insult. But they embraced it. And then it was Impressionism.
Exactly.
And it's a beautiful thing because we can paint reality beautifully by this point. And now we're going beyond that, getting impressions of the sun and the shadows and the colors dappled in the shade.
Yes.
And you find that when you're in Paris. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're delving into a very important art form, Impressionism. And that was really the last time it seems all of European artists were together in one movement. Since then, it's busted apart in many fragmented ways. But in the 1880s and in that era, we've got amazing things happening in Paris. Now, if you're going to go to Paris, Elizabeth, and you want to see the best of the Impressionists, I'm not talking about contemporary exhibits because that comes and goes a lot, but just the very basic, most important museums for this, what would your top four or five sites be?
Of course, you go first to the Orsay Museum. Mm-hmm. That is the largest collection. What was previous the Jeu de Paume. Mm-hmm. But since the old railway station has been transformed into the museum, of course, this is, well, paradise for all those who like Impressionism.
So that's the Orsay Gallery, the former big train station right along the Seine River, which is now turned into the great museum collecting all the collections of post-Louvre art. The Louvre goes until about 1850 or something. And then after that, we see it now together in the Orsay.
Exactly. And you see work until the beginning of the 20th century, so mm-hmm. also post-Impressionism. And then you shouldn't miss, of course, the Orangerie. You know, they completely renovated the Orangerie. And now the water lilies by Monet, who were donated by the great artist to France and the French after the First World War as a gift of peace. Well, if you go there inside, you find peace in yourself.
Now, this is the Orangerie. It was a place where they kept the orange trees originally for the palace associated with the Louvre.
Yes.
And the Jeu de Paume, right across the park, was a tennis court, I think.
Yes.
And then the new purpose is to contain art. And I understand Monet actually designed the way his water lilies would be situated
there. But he never saw it himself. He wanted it to be shown to the public after his death.
Wow.
Because he was aware of the fact that the times had changed. And, you know, after the First World War, art will change very much.
Now, if you want to see more of Monet's great paintings in Paris, what's another gallery you would go to?
I would say go to Marmottan. Don't miss Marmottan Museum. That is where the son of Monet donated all the artwork that was still in Giverny, as you see. He had one son who inherited. When the son died, Michel, he donated it to the Marmottan Museum.
And it's a beautiful mansion also on the edge of Paris, the Marmottan Museum, Marmattan. We often think of Impressionism as paint on canvas, but it is so intimately entwined with the treatment of light and how we perceive things that sculpture, carving marble, can also be Impressionist. If we want to get a dose of that, what should we do?
Yes. Well, then you should go and not miss the Rodin Museum. It is the place where Rodin had his last studio, the last years of his life, and suddenly the idea came up to donate his artwork to the state so that they could transform that mansion.
In his studio. And you can see right where Rodin, the great sculptor, and he happened to be working at the same time as Monet and these great Impressionist painters.
Yes, they were nearly born on the same day, only 2 days.
Is that right?
Yes.
Now,
yes.
You know, we're all tied into a certain medium when we're thinking about art, but music is part of this also.
Yes.
Is it any coincidence that to me, some music feels Impressionistic?
Well, you should listen to Claude Debussy, for instance.
Was he living and working in the same decade?
Yes.
So there
was.
You go.
Yeah. A little later, but yes.
But still Impressionist in style.
Yes, personally. When I go to the Orangery and I see all these water lily paintings around me, I just feel like all the colors together are like tones of the music.
Elizabeth Van Hest is our guide to the Impressionist art in and around Paris right now on Travel with Rick Steves. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And you can keep the conversation going in our online discussion forum. That's in the radio section at ricksteves.com. Frank's calling in from Newport Richey in Florida. Frank, thanks for your call.
Yes, you mentioned, I think, with the Musée Marmottan, and you mentioned the Musée d'Orsay, and you mentioned the Orangerie. Are there any other museums in Paris that feature Impressionism or art from Impressionism or even post-Impressionism?
You know, those are the big three. That's the lion's share of it. And I would say until you've seen those three, I wouldn't worry about any others unless there's a big temporary exhibit. But Elizabeth, I think big news is after, 5 years of being closed, the Picasso Museum is opening up again.
Oh, yes, that's a big thing. We have to wait 5 years now.
And what do we find in the Picasso Museum in Paris?
Well, of course, you have the collection that was donated by the inheritance of Picasso.
Mm-hmm.
It is doubled in surface since the renovation, so there are more rooms to visit, and it is displayed in a different way.
This is truly big news on the art scene.
Yes.
You see
the
art from Picasso's youth in Barcelona, and there's a nice Picasso Museum in Antibes, but in Paris, the Picasso Museum, newly renovated, twice as big. And that's going to be probably the best collection for Picasso anywhere in Europe.
And it is located in a beautiful mansion of the 17th century, which I think Picasso would have highly appreciated because he often chose very old castles to work in.
Frank, thanks for your call.
Okay, thanks very much, Rick.
Yes, bye now. Kristen's on the phone in Delray Beach, Florida. Kristen, thanks for your call.
Thanks. It's great to be able to talk to you. I just want to say how much I enjoyed seeing the Marmottan Museum last May, and I am a great fan of Monet, and to be able to see the painting that he did, which inspired the term Impressionism, was very exciting.
It is fun to see what I think fairly can be called the first Impressionist painting,
mm-hmm.
and to
mm-hmm.
think of the fun that these guys were just, you know, perturbing all of the mainstream artists, and then the winners were the rebels who broke away from the Salon and started their own movement, and of course it was born in Paris, and we can see the great sights there. And Kristen, wasn't it fun getting out to the Marmottan Museum?
It really was, and we were renting an apartment for a couple of weeks, and we're going back again this year.
We really felt
we didn't see it all.
I enjoyed an Impressionist experience just going through the park outside of the Marmottan to see the kids on the carousel there and just think this
Absolutely.
Is the same sort of delightful scene that would have inspired an Impressionist painter back in the 1880s.
Absolutely.
Kristen, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to talk to you. Bye.
You too. Joanne's calling in from Tustin, California.
Hi, it's great to be on. I'm a big Monet fan. And when I was in Paris, I wanted to go visit Monet's garden in Giverny. And it was a bit of far away, having to take train and the bus and walking there, standing in line. But when I stepped into that garden, it was just amazing. I saw just a parts of his paintings everywhere in his garden.
And it is an amazing experience. And let's make sure our listeners know what you're talking about here. Joanne, it's Giverny, and that is G-I-V-E-R-N-Y. I believe it's about 50 miles west of Paris, and you get there by train. You go to a town called Vernon, V-E-R-N-O-N, and then that's just a few miles from Giverny, and you make your way from there. But this is the beautiful sort of farmhouse that Monet spent his last 40 years, and he created his pastoral paradise with a pond and floating lilies and weeping willow trees and the Japanese bridge. And when you walk through there, you can just imagine this artistic genius being in his glory there, and actually seeing his paintings being coming together on the walls of his studio. Elizabeth, tell us about Giverny a little bit.
Every time I'm visiting Giverny, I feel like if I'm walking through one of his paintings. And when I'm in the Orangerie, I see his garden. It's so much linked, and it's always a pleasure. Don't say if you pick a day when it is raining that it's not interesting. It is.
And this is a beautiful thing about Impressionism.
Yes.
You could paint a different painting standing on the same spot, looking at the same garden at different times of day and in different weather. And from an Impressionist's point of view, they're completely different because the physical substance is just the rack upon which the colors and the light is hanging.
Yeah, and that's why Monet picked out so many series. Mm-hmm. Series of haystacks, series of poplars, series of the Cathedral of Rouen. But then the series, of course, of his water lilies.
Mm.
About 30 years he will dedicate his life to water lilies paintings. And the last, let's say, 10 or 15 years, he will work on these huge canvases that
this
you can see
his,
now in the
This was his opus magnum, really,
yes.
this water lilies. Joanne, thanks for your call, and thanks for reminding us about Giverny. Is it Giverny?
Giverny.
Giverny. Thank you, Joanne.
Bye-bye.
Elizabeth, when we're talking about Giverny and we're talking about the Orangerie to see the water lilies, what would you see? You need to see both of them. Is it better to go to the garden first and then see the paintings?
Well, it doesn't matter.
Either way.
Either way.
It's important to see both.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
We've been talking about Impressionism and how Paris inspired these great artists, and they were so revolutionary. Today, as travelers in the 21st century, in this great city of Paris, how would you walk around and just get an Impressionistic joy out of what you see actually today in real life?
Well, first of all, you can go to the Tuileries Gardens, painted so often by Sisley, Pizarro, and Monet, that I consider as the real Impressionist. You sit along the River Seine, and you see the sun reflected in the water, and you're with Monet, who said, "When I look at that, I close my eyes, and what remains in my mind, I reflect it on my canvas, and it will be an artwork, it will be a painting." Of course, you go to Montmartre. There's very little left from the original Montmartre, how the painters have known it. But there is still a wine garden. There are two windmills, wooden windmills, that remind you of the time of the Impressionists.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I would take you to the Bois de Boulogne, because that is the whole period of Napoleon III, you know. You can still rent a little boat, a little barge, and you row exactly like in the paintings of the Impressionists.
And that's the Grand Park on the edge of Paris, where
yes.
you can really enjoy that sort of love of life that the Impressionists so beautifully captured
yes.
on canvas.
Of course, you should also go behind the Saint-Lazare railway station. People like, painters like Caillebotte,
mm-hmm.
they were very impressed by the new constructions. Don't forget that Impressionism is also the Paris of Napoleon III.
Creation. So this is part of the new industrial age,
yes.
and they were capturing the wonder
exactly.
of that age as well.
And you know, Monet went to Saint-Lazare railway station. He even said to the chief in the train station, "Stop that train, I have to paint it."
Elizabeth Van Hest, you're inspiring us all to go back to Paris with a little bit different eyes so we can appreciate the Impressionist overlay of that beautiful city. Thank you very much for sharing.
It was a pleasure.
Au revoir.
Thank you.
Some trips into rural France take you into small towns that seem to be nearly empty as the younger generation relocates to Paris or other big cities looking for work. But in at least one region of France, older travelers, often retirees, and those with the means to have a second home are breathing new life into the countryside. British author Graham Robb joined us a couple months ago to talk about the trailblazing book he wrote called The Discovery of France. He wrote it after researching the entire country for 4 years and 14,000 miles on a bicycle. Here's an extra bit from our interview with him that I think you'll find interesting. Graham explains how an influx of his compatriots from Britain are reviving a number of small towns in the southwest of France. I understand in much of France, even if it's a proud region with a long history, there's people, young generation, moving into the big cities to find jobs, and it's almost leaving small towns depopulated to the point where the government is subsidizing young people who would agree to stay and run the little shop and keep the city basically vibrant enough to stay alive. Did you encounter that in your travels?
Yes, you do see that a lot. Some villages and even small towns are partly boarded up, and you can see houses just being allowed to crumble. And very often, if the houses have been restored, it's because English people, especially people from the south of England, have gone and bought a house. And you would think that the French in some parts would be much more hostile to the old traditional enemy, England. But often they're glad that at least someone has come to keep the place up. Farms are getting bigger and bigger. They're bought up by big concerns. It's harder and harder to make a living. And the high-speed train is a particular thorn in the flesh of a lot of people in rural parts of France because they feel it's allowing everyone to bypass their region and is sucking all the life out of the province.
That's another interesting development. You've got this bullet trains that make the Riviera and the coast of Normandy just an easy day trip distance from London. You've got the economy of scale that's threatening small farms. And you've got English people coming in for a charming little spot where they can get their foie gras. It's an amazing puzzle, isn't it? And when you tour it by bike, maybe the pieces of the puzzle come together a little better.
Yes, I think they do. And one thing I have noticed, because biking makes it very easy to talk to people, is that some parts that were settled by the English a generation or two ago have developed a kind of patois that's sort of franglais, that sounds like badly spoken French, but it's almost become a dialect in its own right.
You're talking about where there'd be a large number of English expats that are settling in?
Yes, and local people get so used to hearing their version of French that it begins to spread to the natives' language, too.
Is the Dordogne an area where there's a particular lot of English people?
Yes.
What is it about the Dordogne? The English love to go to the Dordogne.
It's got a good climate, and it's very varied, and it's a limestone region, which is good building stone.
And it's kind of getting away from it all, too, because it's not on a major train line, or it's, it feels a little more off the beaten path, maybe.
Yes, it is quite remote. And funnily enough, the Dordogne was a target about a century ago for a lot of people in Brittany who wanted to move further south. And it's thought they really just liked the sound of the name. It sounded lovely, Dordogne.
Yeah.
It sounded like the, the promised land.
Graham Robb, author of The Discovery of France. Merci beaucoup.
You're very welcome, Rick. It's my pleasure.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wilder at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. We get technical help from Andrew Wakeling and Kate Mulhern Graham. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. Thanks to Aaron Harding for helping us out this week. You'll find more to each week's show in the radio section of ricksteves.com. That's where you can listen again whenever you like. This week, we also have a feature about Rick encountering a Klapa singing chorus in Croatia. And we'll look for you again next week with more travel with Rick Steves.